There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, 106 FM Talk, 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Got a lot to do this hour, but I want to go live because Vice President Pence is speaking right now with governors around the country talking about the FEMA involvement here in the response to coronavirus. Let's go to that right now. This is live as Vice President Pence is speaking.
On ventilators and how we're going to partner with you to expand the capacity of ventilators going forward. But before I dismiss the media, again, let me just say thank you to all the governors. I mean, this, it really is what makes America different, that we have 50 CEOs of states and several territories who are with us here today. You are leading the efforts in your states. The federal government is coming along behind you, supporting you, resourcing you with expertise, personnel. And it is a real partnership that is precisely how the American people expect us to work. And I just left the president a few minutes ago. He was on the phone with a governor when I was leaving the Oval Office. And I just hope all of you know that while we will continue to use these large forums, not only to share information, but we'll have an ongoing conversation about what you're dealing with at the local level. But I hope you all know that should any need arise, contacting your regional administrator for FEMA, letting them know what your specific needs are. But I hope it goes without saying, I'm a phone call away to any governor on this call. And as you go through the ordinary processes, you should not hesitate to reach me. And I think you also know the president. The president values the relationship and the leadership represented by everyone here. So with that, we'll have the media step out. We'll brief
them. Okay, so we're stepping out. Media stepping out from that. But I just want to catch a little bit of that as the vice president was speaking. All right, and in studio, Dalton Orwig, because this is a story that comes full circle from last week. And, you know, last week the big deal was with the closure of state beaches. So you heard from Mayor Kraft on this show. You heard from Mayor Collier on this show. You know, I said it's a big deal, a very big deal to close the beaches for. I mean, we're thinking about the economy and what a big chunk, obviously, spring break is for those beach economies and shut the beach down at that point. But it's because the spring breakers wouldn't keep social distance. They had big groups of them. They were worried about their people at spring break in Florida and Alabama, Texas, everywhere, congregating, spreading coronavirus, and then they all go back home or back to school and carry that coronavirus to other places. And we heard all the audio from they said, man, we're not spreading, we're just partying or whatever. And now, well, the rest of the story. Dalton, what's surfaced here?
Yeah, so while the spring breakers were partying, the rest of America saying, hey, you might not get seriously ill, but you could pass it along to your relatives and who knows who else. And a lot of the spring breakers thought they couldn't catch it. Well, the news today, University of Tampa says that at least five students have tested positive for coronavirus, and they have said that these five students traveled with other students on a spring break trip. Now, notably, they have not said where that spring break trip was, which I think will be pretty important so that they can let all the other students know that we're in that same area.
When you live and go to school in Tampa, where do you go for spring break?
Yeah, I don't know. They probably go somewhere else, I would imagine.
To somebody else's beach.
I mean, obviously cheaper to stay in Tampa. But so five students in the University of Tampa in Florida will see whether there are more numbers from other colleges that have gone gone spring breaking, and the students that went and visited other parts of other beaches, and maybe even Gulf Shores and Orange Beach. But that's the latest news today. University of Tampa says five students have tested positive, and now we just need to find out where they went on their spring break trip.
And they tested positive. What about those that didn't, you know, they haven't gone to get a test, mm-hmm. and they were exposed to it, and because they can't, you know, college campuses are shuttered, well, so they're going back, a lot of them.
And funny you say that, not all of them, because University of Tampa, they have pivoted to online classes, but their resident halls are still open. So a lot of the kids, I guess, at the University of Tampa are still in close contact there at the school.
So it'll spread there versus them going home, because what I worried about was the kids who went to spring break, but their colleges are shut down for the year, right? Then where are they going to go? Mm-hmm. They're going back home, where mom and dad and grandparents and older family members are, and they could be infected and come in there, you know, and before they ever show any symptom, they could pass it on. So
may never show symptoms,
yeah,
and pass it along.
And so there you go. But there's at least some cases here that have been tested and have been, they're positive for COVID-19.
At least five to this point.
There you go. See, so, spring breakers. Any group, it's not to just pick on spring breakers, it's just too easy, but any group that's in one place, you know, a bunch of people. We were watching that presser just a second ago with the vice president, and, you know, they've got everybody there, I think, for show, but they got everybody sitting 6 feet apart. No, like I said, over the weekend, talking to folks in my front yard, standing 10 feet apart, talking mm-hmm. to people, felt kind of strange, but we're doing that, and I think a lot of people are taking precautions.
Yeah, a lot of people are, but then again, you've got video from different parts of America where people are still going out and playing pickup basketball, or I saw a picture from New York, and I guess a really popular, very expensive eatery that's doing to-go orders, and you had lines and lines of delivery drivers within, you know, way within 6 feet of each other, like basically stacked in like they're waiting to pick these orders up. So not everyone at this time practicing the social distancing rules.
I think that City Councilman Fred Richardson was upset over the weekend because people were not, they saw one of the basketball games going on, I think, there at Sage Park, and wanted that shut down. And, you know, I'll tell you, it takes some time. While I did a good job standing in distance from people in my front yard this weekend, I also was in, I was at the Dollar General store in Citronelle. What's up, Citronelle? I was there Saturday, and I got in line and realized I'd gotten pretty close behind this guy in line. Like, not like no personal space, not like, you know, European or Asian.
Were you breathing on his neck?
No, because I can't stand to be that close to other human beings, but I was within 6 feet, mm-hmm. and I went, and I backed up.
Yeah.
It actually clicked in my brain. I said, well, I better back up and give this guy
six feet plus. Yeah, I've been doing that mid-conversation with people, which makes it kind of awkward. I'm like, oh, I'm 4 feet here. I think I'm going to take a couple more steps back.
Adjust this to 6 feet before it goes any farther. Okay. Coming back this hour, we're going to get the interview with Dr. Eric Mackey from this morning, State Superintendent of Schools. What about the children? I mean, they're out now. I mean, they had plans to go back in April, but good chance they may not be able to do that. What happens next? We'll get that interview coming up. Y'all stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 117 FM Talk 106.5. Online, fmtalk1065.com. And the information that we get from the elected officials, from medical folks, from business folks, all dealing with COVID-19 are all one place. If you go to the front page of our website, fmtalk1065.com, click the COVID-19 local news tab. That dropdown has all our interviews. Also, we've asked on our website in the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question, on a scale of 1 to 5, how quarantined are you right now? It's funny, I was just texting back and forth with my sister who lives in New York. She lives in Harlem specifically. And they're like not leaving the house.
Mm-mm.
Not leaving the house. And it's real tough. I mean, she is a choreographer, tap dance teacher. I know it sounds real strange being kin to me, but it's what she does up there, and she can't make any money. She has to go teach classes to make money, and she can't do that. But yeah, so on a scale of 1 to 5, how quarantined are you right now? 1 is the least quarantined, 5 is the most. And right now, 12% are at number 1, which is going about life normally as I normally have. 47% are at number two, still going to work but taking some precautions. Number three, 12% out of work or working from home but still going out visiting family and friends. Number four, still going to work but otherwise staying at home. That's 24%. And number five, staying at home under complete self-quarantine, 6%.
Yeah, now my initial vote was number two, still going to work but taking some precaution. But then after this weekend, I had some time to kind of self-reflect and realize that in reality, my life is number four, going to work but otherwise staying at home. So things haven't changed too much in my life.
All right. But, I mean, you who goes? I mean, if you go to the grocery store, do you go?
Actually, my wife's been going to the grocery store. There you go. Staying at home.
And you stay at home. Hey, we're looking right now at what's happening in Washington, and the vote just went down in the Senate. And what happened here?
Yeah, the stimulus package fails to advance for the second day in a row. They voted 49-46 this time. Now, the vote yesterday, I believe, went 48-47. If you're wondering what happened to that one vote, Doug Jones, right here in Alabama, he broke with the Democrats in order to vote in favor of the stimulus package. But still, they need 60 votes to advance this in order to vote again. But 49-46 and lots of discontent right now in the Senate chambers as they argue through this. And lots of angry people and, you know, lots of angry Americans after this fails to pass again.
And with Rand Paul being being in quarantine now.
And Romney and Lee.
They can't remote vote, can they?
No, which I think is, you know, I know there's lots of tradition and lots of rules, but it's strange to me.
I'm with you. Now, could there be some exception? We're making, okay, how about this, Washington? You're telling us that our children can't go to school, restaurants can't be open, bars can't be open, people can't go to public areas to congregate, and you're still going to stay with the rule that the senator, can't you have an amendment or something for a limited time to allow those senators to vote remotely?
Yeah, but even if they were able to vote, I mean, we're talking you need 60 votes, so you add three to the Republicans.
I know, but it's just still, if people are going to go, why is it 49-46? You know, what? It's because those people are in quarantine. Yes, you need more votes, but those three votes make a difference.
Yeah, they do. Some more on this vote from the Hill. They said that Senate Minority Leader Charles Chuck Schumer and Steven Mnuchin, they met at least six times yesterday and began talking again this morning. Schumer said shortly before the vote he was confident that they'd be able to get an agreement today. He said, we hope and expect those negotiations to conclude today. Since then, you had Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. He ripped the Democrats for slow-walking the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And then Susan Collins was actually temporarily blocked. Now, she's the Republican from Maine. She was temporarily blocked from speaking from the floor as the Democrats tried to get clarity on what the schedule was. Collins said that those tactics were unbelievable. And then Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas could be heard
be careful
on the floor with an expletive. He called it basically BS, except he used the full word. And then Republicans, they've been arguing the Democrats should let the bill get over this initial hurdle, advance the bill, and then they would have days of time to debate so they could use those to finish up negotiations. But at this point, they can't even get past this first stage.
Let's do a compare and contrast. I think this is interesting. As you said, Senator Doug Jones, Alabama Senator Doug Jones, broke with Democrat ranks to vote with the Republicans here on this. Okay?
And he's the only one that's broken ranks here.
I want to give you, so his tweet from yesterday, or middle of the night, said, you know the old saying, half a loaf is better than none, but the vote today was not even half a loaf for hospitals, city and county governments, small business and working folks who would have just got a couple of slices while most of the bread goes to bailouts. That's why I voted no. You know, that is, I think there's a tell here. If that was his reason yesterday, and if Democrats were arguing, if Chuck Schumer was arguing, this is not enough relief for hospitals, city and county governments, small business and working folks, I think Democrats could rule the day if that was the issue, right? They could press the Republicans into, hey, you need to spend more for these programs. But that's not what the hang-up's been. It's this, it's a push for women's health issues. It's a, which we know what that means, right? That's a discussion of abortion. I mean, that's what Pelosi put it in the House, right? Tried to move that. It's on top of that, it's wind and solar tax credits. And I'm not one of these stick-in-the-mud people that think everything about wind and solar is bad. It's just not for discussion right now, as people don't have a paycheck. you know, the fact that they're talking about, you know, making a collective bargaining agreement, enhancements for unions, these are all things that can be discussed. But damn it, right now, really? Really?
Yeah.
Now, if the Democrats were arguing what Doug Jones was arguing yesterday, that, hey, the Republican bill doesn't do enough for these sectors, it's all going to go to big business, it's not going to go to regular folks, they were making that argument, today they'd be getting traction. But that's not the issue. It's they want certain carve-outs in this thing, and they're not voting for it. I want Americans to realize what's happening here as this goes down, as people are not getting relief here. Businesses, small businesses not getting relief, people not getting relief, and the Democrats are not trying to get more for the people. They're trying to get other things put in there. And you have Doug Jones saying, sorry, Chuck, I'm going to vote with the Republicans. So that's interesting. Yeah. Good on Doug Jones.
And I found this tweet notable from Mark Hemingway with Real Clear Investigations. Now, I'm not sure where Hemingway usually leans politically. I don't know that he's a complete pro-Trumper that backs everything the president does, and I don't know if he's liberal or not, but this tweet, anyway, he said, I mean, and if you've been to Real Clear Politics or Real Clear Investigations, it doesn't seem that they're decidedly conservative or decidedly
right,
liberal.
Fair enough.
But he said, look, if you want examples of the congressional GOP acting in bad faith, they abound. But in 20-plus years of being a political reporter, I don't think I've seen anything quite like the Democrats' partisanship right now when the stakes are so high.
Once again, let's repeat that. So who is this again?
This is Mark Hemingway, okay. A journalist with Real Clear Investigations. That's an offshoot of realclearpolitics.com. Mm-hmm. And his tweet, he said, if you want examples of the congressional GOP acting in bad faith, they abound. But in 20-plus years of being a political reporter, I don't think I've seen anything quite like the Democrats' partisanship right now when the stakes are so high.
Wow. Wow. It was enough that Alabama's Democrat senator broke ranks and voted with the Republicans. So once again, I mean, if the argument at one point, if the argument was that old argument that the Democrats were saying, we need to do more for the people and the Republicans aren't doing enough for them, I'd listen to that. And sometimes maybe even in that situation, if it was true, I might side with the Democrats in that situation. But what's happening here, like he says there in that quote, this is about... This is about like presidential election politics thrown into a bill that's there to try to help people in a healthcare world, at the same time trying to flatten the curve the other way of what is a massive downturn in our economy, falling off a cliff, a two-week period of time, massive downturn.
A couple of the things that they tried to sneak into this bill here, it says... a study on certain climate change mitigation efforts. We're talking about this relief bill. It said not later than 90 days after the date of enactment of this act, the Secretary of Transportation shall seek to enter into an agreement with the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine to conduct a study on climate change mitigation efforts with respect to the civil aviation and aerospace industries. I know you and Todd Stacey spoke about that a little earlier. And also, they're talking about corporate board diversity here and pay equity. They said corporate board demographic data, including total number of board members, gender, race, and ethnic identity of board members, as otherwise known or provided voluntarily, board position titles, as well as any leadership and subcommittee assignments, that there needs to be a certain
diversity
on these boards. And I guess there's a time and a place to debate that stuff, and it should be debated. But right now, it's crazy that the
Democrats
arguing over this.
They have flown too close to the sun. They have stepped in it. I really do. I think, like I said to Todd Stacey last hour, I think there's a commercial that has the sound of the knocking on the door from the landlord and some family through no fault of their own that are put out of a job. Hardworking folks, because of everybody having to shelter at home and do all these things to be quarantined, these people don't have a job. The rent is due, and I would have the audio of the Democrats arguing about those things in the background while the constant knocking on the door was going on. I think they have absolutely lost sight here, and once again, it sounds like Doug Jones thinks the same thing. Senator Doug Jones voting with Republicans. So that's when hopefully we'll get him on the show this week to talk about breaking breaking ranks.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll be after they advance this bill. And hopefully that gets done today, as Mitch McConnell was saying that he hoped they would get it done. And just real quickly, in the world of sports, I know we were talking about it some this morning, and whether the 2020 Summer Olympics would be held, because Japan, Tokyo, they were holding off as long as possible, hoping they could get these games started, if not late July, at least this year.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, IOC member, the International Olympic Committee member, Dick Pound, he says that the 2020 Olympics will be postponed due to the coronavirus pandemic, and looks like they'll be pushed back to 2021. And a huge part of that is also all these athletes and training. They need to be training, and it's really tough right now for these athletes around the entire world to do the training necessary to prepare for the Olympics. So I don't know the last time that the Olympics were delayed, or if they've ever been delayed, but they're pushing the 2020 Olympics back now until maybe 2021. And then that brings into question, you know, it's not important on the list of things right now that are important, but college football and NFL football.
Yeah, but
will those seasons be able to go on?
You ask the questions about revenue, you know, and jobs out there. These things are all huge. You think about President last night talking about being like a wartime president, and he got some lampooning for that. But I would say, in a situation where we have reports of the fight against corona from every continent on Earth, except, I guess, not Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Antarctica.
They don't send a team, I believe.
Yeah, I think they're probably keeping the people at the base down there, and they're probably not leaving. I don't know. But every continent on Earth, except for Antarctica, with coronavirus cases. Think about that. And then Olympics being changed, the massive debt incurred to economies all over the planet. This is the level of world war. I mean, this is, you know, this is a level that, sure, it's not a shooting war, it's not the same thing, but the involvement and the involvement of so many nations on so many continents dealing with something at 100%, maybe not too much of a different kind of war, but it has that kind of mobilization.
It's a good comparison. USA Today says 1916 Summer Games were canceled because of World War One,
mm-hmm.
as were the 1940 and 1944 Summer Games because of World War Two. So not a bad analogy there.
All right, coming right back, our interview from this morning with Dr. Eric Mackey, Superintendent of Schools for Alabama.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, this reminds me. I had to play the parody song, that my favorite COVID-19 parody song that's been done. So the reason I thought about it, this is The Police right here, and it's a cover of a Police song, a parody of a Police song. We'll do that here in just a little bit. Also, I want to say again, thank you to Stephen Haywood over at the Shrimp Basket. Thank you, man, who brought us a big bag full of great sandwiches here. Po' Boys, we had I had shrimp and Kaneka sausage. A reminder, too, they're open for takeout. Two locations here open for takeout, so you can call them, get in touch with them, and get that order. And it's still good, still the same food. And our friend, I know that Cammy is slinging ice cream. Just can't be in there, but you can also go by. And we're keeping our eyes on local businesses, not just restaurants, but local business. Yeah, we're local business. We're with you through this whole process. And starting tomorrow, special programming here at FM Talk 106.5. My buddy Cam Barston, you hear his show normally Wednesday nights at 6, What's Working, that'll still be there. But What's Working, special edition, small business and dealing with coronavirus, starts tomorrow at 1. So he'll be on Tuesdays and Thursdays, hopefully for a short period of time, not because I don't want to hear Cam, but we can get through this. But during the weeks or months or of this process, Cam's going to be on Tuesdays and Thursdays with 1-hour shows, interviewing people and asking questions that are important to small business folks here in Mobile and Baldwin counties. And it's how loan money, it's how you deal with employees, how you navigate all. He's dealing with these issues. You can also suggest subjects you got questions about, and he's going to tackle those. So we start that tomorrow at 1 right here at FM Talk 106.5. All right, interview that we had this morning with Dr. Eric Mackey, State Superintendent of Schools, about what happens here with the school, if the kids don't go back next week or the week after, what if they don't go back at until May is over? What about that for school? We had that conversation this morning. Replay that from earlier today. Joining us now, State Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Eric Mackey, and so much to talk about. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I know it's a busy job as it is, but obviously with everything going on, way busier than normal. And I want to just kind of go through a list here of questions I have for you. But before we do that, your sense and state of schools in Alabama right now and weathering this for the students.
Well, so we're doing okay right now. I'll give you a little bit of just a rundown of last week. So we shut schools down last week, and you know the plan was to have a shutdown over a period of 3 days, close everybody on Wednesday. The big challenge, obviously, was 724,000 students across the state. Bringing all those buses to a halt, making transition plans for how we're going to feed kids during the closing. There was a lot to be done. A lot of our school systems, especially in the Birmingham area, actually had to shut down on Monday because we were already having, some positive tests up there. So all of that is done. We began on Tuesday the process of reopening schools, believe it or not, even though that's still a couple of weeks off, because we have to look at what are our options going to be going forward. So right now we've got every school closed in the state. We have all the athletic programs shut down, and people are kind of waiting on edge. The unfortunate thing is, of course, this was going to be spring break for most of the schools in the state. 95% of the children were supposed to be on spring break this week or last week, and they're not being able to enjoy their spring break. Unfortunately, most of them are not quarantined, but they're definitely not able to get out and do the things they otherwise would be able to do on spring break.
Dr. Mackey, you said a couple weeks here. Has there been a decision made about, I know we're talking about 3 weeks, but does that timeline move as more cases come online in Alabama with COVID-19, or are you still sticking with the original 3 weeks? Where do you see that?
Yeah, it could move, definitely. We have had conversations with public health last Thursday night. Dr. Harris and I were talking Friday morning. We were talking about what our options might be, and we really just don't know yet. Our number one goal obviously would be that, hey, this thing runs its course, life is back to normal on April 6th. But I think anybody who's listening to your show, who's watching the news, who's paying attention to what's going on around the country, realizes that the likelihood of us being back to normal on April 6th is not very good. So we're making contingency plans for how we might be able to really close out this school year in what we're calling alternate delivery. You know, that may be some digital, it may be some kind of correspondence course. There are lots of options we're looking at out there, but realistically, we don't expect to be back to normal on April 6th.
Dr. Mackey, you formed a state education task force last week. I'm wondering the priorities of that task force. How often are you meeting, and what all kind of is encompassed by that task force? What are you trying to figure out?
Yeah, good question. So we met only once, and that was all by video. We're obviously, like everybody else, trying to practice social distancing. So we met on Thursday for about 2 hours. We divided into five subcommittees to look at different things, and I don't have them right in front of me, but one was working with the business community, one was kind of digital online capacity, one was looking at what we might do for graduation requirements, those kind of things. We then sent out a survey on Thursday afternoon to all the superintendents in the state. Last night I had all of those back, and we were analyzing those. Of course, as you can imagine, they're not all all the responses are not the same. So we've got different challenges in urban centers than we do from some of our rural communities. But we have that survey. Task force, first thing they did was help us develop the survey. We got that out. The task force will meet again tomorrow morning, again virtually, and we'll look at the survey results. We'll continue to meet throughout this week, and certainly the subcommittees are meeting in the interim, but I can tell you that we're trying to get, or I intend to get, a recommendation to the governor this week as to what we might be able to do after April 6th.
Dr. Mack, you saw the announcement there on Friday that Alabama students won't be taking the standardized test this year. How does that affect matriculation from grade to grade? And then I want to get into talking about the seniors as well. So, first of all, what does this mean when they don't take the standardized test?
Okay, so the standardized test has no bearing on each individual student. That's just how we build our state report card. It's school reporting. Of course, it does give students some information, lets parents see kind of how they're progressing in the curriculum, but it's not high stakes for students. So it will have nothing to do with matriculation or graduation. Students won't see much difference. Let me say that I really appreciate the great support that we've gotten from U.S. Department of Ed, Secretary DeVos, Assistant Secretary Brogan, who is a former Floridian, was state superintendent in Florida and head of the university system there, and of course President Trump, because they have said in any way they can relieve regulatory burdens on us, they're all about it. In fact, we've never had so much relief from federal regulation as what we've seen in the last week, and that was a big part of it. So it allows us now not to focus on test prep, but to focus instead on health and safety of our students and instruction. So that's a good, really good thing that the federal government has done for us. Takes that off our plate. Doesn't affect matriculation, and then you know, seniors are our top priority. I can assure you of that. We plan to graduate every senior either on time or very near to on time. We're not going to bring people back for another senior year next year or something like that. I've heard some of these people are worried about horror stories, but that is definitely not our plan.
How do you do that? How do you, I mean, graduate them without the number of hours and days that we've always heard about that are required, and I guess they're a chance to take those tests that they have to test to pass?
So there are no tests they have to pass. The only test we give for high school students are a test called Work Keys, which is a career readiness assessment, and then the ACT. And those tests have already passed. So we've done those earlier this year. Those are tests we give earlier in the year, so that's done. Fortunately, students will have to complete their work. So right now, what we're looking at is, again, prioritizing seniors. What are the standards they have missed? We only require students to meet standards. They don't have to, you know, they don't have to have a certain number of hours in the seat anymore, like it was 30 years ago when I was in high school. You have to be able to meet the standards. What we're trying to do is identify what are the most important standards, have students met them, and if they haven't, then what do we have to do? Maybe doing some online instruction, doing some correspondence course. What do we need to do to make sure they finish up so they can we can award them a diploma and they can go on to whatever their next step is next fall? And I want to be careful. Now, there may be some students that will have to come back and maybe finish a course or two in either online or by correspondence, or in the summer. We may have some students who have to come back in the summer. If I could give you an example, so especially career tech courses. If I'm a student and I'm a welder, and I want to get a job welding, shipbuilding, working in construction, whatever, and I'm working on a welding certificate, well, we can't just give you that welding credential without the physical hands-on test. And so some of those students, right now we can't give those tests, obviously. Some of those students may have to come back in the summer and do their demonstrated competency test to get that final credential. So some of them may have to come back and do some things like that over the summer, but that'll be a part of our plan to make sure that they can get it done in time to start a career or college or junior college, whatever they want to do in the fall.
Dr. Mackey, from the objective side, I want to read something from the subjective side, but this is got this text here into the station, but this is something I've heard from others. This texter says, I have a senior, and there have been a lot of tears. We understand why there's no prom, no hearing her name called out at graduation, but after hustling for that honors diploma, things just bite right now.
Yeah, it's very tough. Now, we're hoping. You know, I'm always a hopeful silver lining kind of person, and it's more and more difficult every day to find all the hope. But we really believe by, you know, sometime in the next several weeks that we're going to return to a more normal life. And so hopefully a lot of these graduation ceremonies can be held. They may be held in June or sometime in the summer. I don't know. I mean, possible that, again, public health says, hey, it's safe to go back and have mass gatherings by, you know, May 20th, 21st, when a lot of the graduations are. Then we'll hold graduation. But it may be that they're still saying at that point, hey, you can't put, you know, 500 or 1,000 people or one graduation I'm scheduled to speak at in May. I think there are 7,500 people they're expecting there. So that's a mass ceremony. And they may say, hey, we can't do that, but we'll have to do something alternate, something smaller. Or we just delay those ceremonies until later in the summer when it is safer. Of course, that's a decision we're going to work with each local school board to make it. And I can tell you, nothing has pained me more, aside from the true health concerns that many of our folks are facing as they're in ICUs. But beside that, nothing's pained me more than seeing so many of these seniors who've lost their final baseball season. They've lost their soccer and softball seasons. Their prom, as this person mentions. I mean, there's so many things that make high school a memorable and enjoyable experience, and I hate that those things have been put aside right now.
We're talking with Dr. Eric Mackey, the Alabama State School Superintendent. And Dr. Mackey, I'm really interested in the online learning, some of this virtual learning. Some of the teachers have been going above and beyond, great videos they've been putting out there for their students. I'm wondering, it almost seems seamless for so many of these schools to pivot to online learning only. Is there kind of did that come from the state down, or are we seeing a lot of these local districts do that on their own all the way down to the local schools? How did so much of that come about?
Yeah, most of that is ground up, not state down. So at the state level, we have a very good virtual high school program. That's called Access. It's been around for several years. And we've had students all across the state, rural areas, urban areas, suburban, using Access courses for almost two decades now. And of course, it's much more robust than it was when it began. So they might take one course online or two courses online. We have a few across the state. By a few, I mean into the hundreds who take all their courses online. But it's just high school. So what we're seeing, though, in a lot of places is really the locals have been able to reach down and do so much with elementary schools and middle schools. Now, the problem for state superintendent is that is not true everywhere. So we still know that about 60% of our students don't have a really strong at-home internet connection. That's not saying they don't have some internet, but it's saying that they don't have it strong enough that they can do like back-to-back, face-to-face learning. And so it is a challenge in many parts of the state, but we've seen some amazing stuff, like you say, teachers posting videos, posting lessons online. It's a different level, though, if that teacher's teaching a course where she can personally interact with each child back and forth. Of course, that's takes a much stronger internet connection. It takes much more robust platform. Now, we have some locals that can do that now, and so when we come back to school, most likely we're going to be in a place where different communities are getting their education in different ways. Long term, we got to think about how do we make sure we manage broadband and access across the state.
Dr. Mackey, we talked about seniors, but let's talk about second graders or seventh graders or sophomores. What about when they start school next year? I know it's depends on when they go back to school, but do you see a situation where in August they finish the year before and then start on the new year, or what will that look like?
Yeah, we're still working on that. What we would like to do is to give everybody an opportunity to finish out this year. Now, that may not mean finishing by May 15th or by May 20th. It may mean extending a little bit into the summer. but we'd like to see everybody finish up. So if you're in second grade, we want that second grade to finish all the second grade standards this year and then be promoted to third grade to start next year. And there may be some places and some opportunities where that just doesn't happen. So we may have a student that has a particular disability, and they really need some one-on-one instruction, and we're just not able to do that this year. So they may have to come back. We may have to do some things across the summer or even in the fall after school to help that person progress. But we're working through those issues right now. For the most part, most of our students should be able to kind of wind down and complete the standards necessary for this year. And then we hope when we start back in August to have everybody promoted and to be moving on to into the new year.
All right, Dr. Mackey, before we wrap up here, once again, your best assessment or kind of what you use to assess when you think schools will go back in. What is the measure that you're using with the state school system?
We are completely reliant on the Department of Public Health, and we're in touch with them every single day, but we're waiting for public health to say, can we reopen schools in a traditional manner where students are in the classroom, teachers are in the classroom? Can we do that April 6th? If not, do we think we might be able to do it April 15th or April 20th or 30th? But if we don't foresee that coming, then we will we'll be looking at alternate modes of delivery. How do we open school in a different way? Everywhere that's possible. And then the last thing I do want to mention, though, we're going to give our local school districts a lot of autonomy in how they feel they can best meet the needs of their students. So what you can do in Mobile and what you can do up in Washington County or even further up in Choctaw County, they're very different because of the geography, because of the broadband access, because of how far apart people live. I mean, they're just different things. But we're going to make sure that we have a plan for every child in the state.
Dr. Eric Mackey, State Superintendent of Schools, thank you for your time, and I appreciate the information, and we'll be checking back with you soon.
Yes, glad you do it. Be glad to come back on sometime.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Yeah, probably not the best idea since we're about to wrap up and go to Feinbaum, but I want to do this. I want to take us out with a little bit of a little levity, you know, helps, I think, helps a lot. And what I think is my favorite of the coronavirus parody songs so far, a remake here of the Police's Don't Stand So Close to Me, this one called I Don't Want COVID-19.
To keep the virus from getting free, it's inside you, there's no use, no symptoms to display. Crashed markets, stores closed now, people are panicking. Don't stand.
We'll wrap it up on this edition of Midday Mobile. Feinbaum on the way next. Talk to y'all in the morning. Be safe out there, y'all.